Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to the Popcorn Hour. I'm Matt, and this is James, and today we're discussing V for Vendetta.
Yeah, remember. The 5th of November.
Not December.
Wow.
I messed it up.
Wow.
Remember the 5th of November.
I don't think you remembered.
No, I guess I didn't.
Okay, you want to talk about... You want to say what you watched again?
No.
Yeah, okay, so... We filmed 2 episodes today. And I said I'd talk a little bit more about what I watched. Terrifier. I'm just going to say the ones I wanted to talk about. Terrifier. I saw a review on it that said all icing, no cake. I was like, that makes sense. That fits. The writing is bad. Looks-wise, it just looks like a student film. Mm-hmm. But the visual effects are really good. Tron. It's the same thing, except the visual effects are all bad.
Yeah.
Tron Legacy looks awesome. Amazing soundtrack. That's about it. I also did watch... what did I watch? I started watching 8.5, and then I had to do something for like 2 minutes. And instead of re-watching what I did, I was like, I just turned it off, and I was like, I'm going to finish. I don't want any distractions. I just want to watch this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then I watched half of Jackie Brown, and then I had to do something, but I was a little, disappointed that this is the last Tarantino that I'm going to watch before his final movie.
Mm. I mean, you can rewatch one.
Hmm?
You can rewatch one.
Oh yeah. I can rewatch them all, but
yeah.
But like this is the last one.
First watch, yeah.
Last first watch.
Until the last one.
Until the last one. If that even ever, at this point, I don't even know if that's gonna happen.
Yeah.
He's like started it like 4 times and just bailed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, watch V for Vendetta and gave it a 4.
You gave it a 4?
Gave it a 4.
I did too.
I don't think at the end of this it's gonna go up.
Mm-hmm.
But.
This is the first time you've watched it?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I watch this every couple of years. I like this movie a lot.
Do you watch it around November?
Yeah.
Or December, yeah. Apparently?
Yep.
Well, okay. Before we get into the spoiler-free part, he didn't know that this was a DC movie.
I did not. I never paid attention to the title cards before. Before I watched this, I found out that it was a DC movie. Character, because I have been getting into reading comics lately.
Didn't you just put a comic down here? Didn't you bring like 2 or 3?
Yeah, I brought down the Green Arrow one. Yeah, I did. Yeah,
that was good. That was really funny.
It took me a week.
That was really funny. The thing you sent me about it.
Yeah.
So the day that we did our Criterion of the Month episode, that you can go listen to or watch at the Popcorn Hour, anywhere, anytime, or every.
Anywhere, anytime.
Everything, everywhere, all at once. When we did our episode on Night of the Living Dead. Actually, when I edited it, I realized it looked a lot better on your camera. Yeah. There's a panel in the Green Arrow comic that he read that was about like a mutilated body, mm-hmm. and said it would make George Romero like cringe.
Yeah. Puke.
Yeah. Puke.
Yeah. So I was like, oh. I thought that was very, very interesting. Since
we That's such a niche, like random comment.
Yeah.
That only like four people are going to get.
Yeah. Kevin Smith wrote most of what's in there, that one. So I could see, I mean, he's a major film buff, so.
But there's no way that like, I wonder how many people actually got that.
Yeah, the timing was perfect for me.
Like down to like the last minute details.
Yeah.
Actually, and then apparently, I forgot to mention the movie news. Apparently there's like, the Boys has, I think, a release date or something now. I don't know.
So you don't know when?
Mm-hmm. No. I still need to watch Gen V. But you need to watch Gen V as well.
Yeah, I know. I will, eventually. We'll see. All right. So, V for Vendetta, released in 2006. Director James Mateague with his directorial debut.
Wait, what? I thought it was 2005.
This says 2006.
Did it come out on the November 5th?
I don't think so.
Release date.
Oh. Oh, it is 2005.
This is the official theatrical release is March 17th. Or in the UK. The US might have been earlier, I don't know. I hate it when stuff like this happens in movies. Like, I have a list on my letterbox of...
Yeah, March 17th, 2006.
My favorite movie that came out since I was born. Mm-hmm. And Letterboxd and Google both sometimes say different stuff. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Why are you trying to...
Letterboxd says 2005.
Well, something I looked up said 2005, but then when I opened it up, it said 2006.
When I looked it up, it said... If you just look at V for Vendetta, it says 2005, but it says the release date was 2006. Mm. That's weird.
Okay. Anyway, before you made me look stupid, came out 2006 from the research I just did.
It's a good year.
Director James Mateague in his directorial debut. The genre is dystopian action. It's a political thriller. There's a lot of politics in this. It's set in the UK. Runtime around 132 minutes. This is kind of a long movie. But the plot summary. In a totalitarian future Britain, a mass vigilante known only as V wages a one-man war against the fascist Norse Fire regime. After rescuing a young woman, Evie Hammond, from secret police, he involves her in his elaborate plan to spark a revolution, culminating in the destruction of Parliament on Guy Fawkes Night. Through bold acts of terrorism, propaganda, and philosophy, V aims not only to punish the guilty, but to awaken the public.
That was a good last line in there. That was a good one.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. So, first thoughts, since this is your first time watching it?
I had no idea what to expect from this, because I've heard, like, so much, like, random stuff about this movie. Mm-hmm. Not at all what I thought it was going to be. But I really enjoyed it a lot. I will probably watch this every 5th of November. Mm-hmm. Now.
I'll watch it the 5th of December.
It was enjoyable. It mm-hmm. was, well, it was thought provoking, I'd say. Yeah. It doesn't even feel like a comic book movie.
No. Of course, the action and yeah. stuff like that. Obviously.
Mostly at the end of the movie. Yeah. I got a fact about that one.
Okay.
But yeah, mostly because the end of the movie feels a lot like kind of like Blade. That I just mm-hmm. reminded me of Blade for some reason.
Yeah.
I guess because it was that like early-ish 2000s of. That's mid-2000s, but like that.
Yeah, like the X-Men Blade.
That slow motion, like 60 frames per second. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I have always liked this movie, and V is probably one of my favorite characters in a movie, mm-hmm. just based off of his look, his...
I thought the hair was weird.
I think it fit for the mask.
It fits the mask, but it's just strange.
Yeah, but like... The way he fights, his idealistic kind of mentality, and the, because it's all based off of like what happened to him in the past, mm-hmm. along with a couple of other things, but also, really like his dialogue in this.
Yeah, his dialogue, his dialogue from the start is
so great.
He's a yapper.
Yes.
He just yaps.
Yeah, but it's so intellectual because he uses a lot of big words, and some of his like little monologues are
every time he talks it's just a monologue.
Yeah, but there's specific ones that if you've noticed.
The V's.
He uses a lot of words with V's in them, which is hard to do.
Especially the first one that he does. Mm-hmm. I was like sitting there like, whoa.
Yes. I did learn two things about this movie on this watch. That it is a DC, it's a DC character based off of a comic book. And then Hugo Weaving plays V.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, I immediately, his voice, I was like, Is he about to call Natalie Portman Frodo Baggins?
Mm.
And then I was like, is he about to like Captain America or something?
Yeah, but I mean it's.
And then I like was like, is this Hugo Weaving? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, it is. And I also didn't realize when he was throwing out those V's, I was like, this might not be Hugo Weaving. This might be Eminem here.
Mm.
I was like, whoa, he's just like.
Because he was so the dialogue for him is so fast, and a lot of what he says is kind of like an. Without practice, you could easily stumble over your words quite a bit. But yeah, having Hugo Weaving, finding out that he's in this movie was definitely surprising for me. He's V, Red Skull, in Lord of the Rings. He's in a lot of different Mr. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's in a lot of all these great movies. So
I think... Ooh, I don't know who I like more, V or Agent Smith, Mr. Anderson. I don't know.
Recency bias, V.
Recency bias, V, but I love The Matrix.
I don't know. But that's
a hard question.
What's good about this is this is
they're
one
similar-ish movie. Though. Yeah.
It's one movie, whereas Matrix has four.
Yeah.
So, and Mr. Smith is...
He's not even in like the second one though.
No, but he continues
kind of his legacy continues. Yeah. Like V.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I also these two movies are aligned. I was thinking that towards the end. I was like, oh, I would fit this among the category of like They Live, The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it's yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even
yeah, the same
full kind circle. Of full this, full circle with the V.
Yeah. The same idea of like an end goal for the main character. Definitely V, Neo, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you ready to talk spoilers and anything and everything?
Mm-hmm.
All right. First, let's talk about the cinematography.
I immediately, when he starts spitting out those Vs, and then he slashes a V onto the sign with that, pretty sure it was
a propaganda.
I think it was a Dutch angle that they did for that one. And I remember just going, Dutch angle at the cold open.
Yeah,
this is gonna be a good movie.
Yeah,
I love the Dutch angle.
Yeah, this
and the sparks that like come off.
Yeah, everything about the cinematography in this is great. I like the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
The grays, the reds are very bright compared to everything else around it,
mm-hmm.
and all the explosions.
Yeah,
are really good, and. Like, and nothing looked super fake.
Yeah, I feel like it's pretty textbook. Like, a lot of the cinematography in this is just, like, textbook. This, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get your soft light, key light, your edge light.
Yeah.
Rule third shot. There you go. But then they get really experimental with, like, some of their sequences with their big action sequences,
mm-hmm.
which I do enjoy. Like, in the prison, when you have that top-down shot,
mm-hmm.
and it's all black, but the center frame, it's a frame within a frame,
mm-hmm.
which is it was textbook good. It was textbook really well done. It's good. I don't think it's like something that shines from this movie, but
no, but everything looks really good and very, it fits the setting of this kind of British regime where everything seems gloomy and just everybody seems unhappy.
Mm. And like every time it's day outside and like you, they're outside, it almost feels like you're like, we're not supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how that was like subtly just like you feel that through it. And it's, they don't like.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Throw it out there like, oh, look at this. We're outside. This shouldn't be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's almost like you're like, what's going to happen?
Yeah. I watched this in like 2021-ish. We had just moved to Hawaii. But before that, I was at Fort Hood in Texas. And it was very... this movie reminded me a lot of like after COVID had first started. Because we did have a curfew. Those of us that lived in the barracks, like particularly my unit, like we had a curfew. We couldn't go out. We couldn't leave post, which was annoying. And it was very, it reminded me of, or this movie reminded me of that time where it was just very like gloomy because of everything that was going on. And it was like, if you get caught outside of post, you're automatically in trouble, which is the same thing. If you're caught after curfew, you're immediately arrested, things like that. So, of course, like this movie, they talk about a virus outbreak that was kind of like a, somebody had released it to everybody, which, I mean, kind of reminded me of, not necessarily COVID, somebody releasing a virus on the world, but just a virus being there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very reminiscent of my time, my final days at Fort Hood.
I kind of want to go into the characters next.
Okay.
So, the one thing, I don't remember where I heard it, but it was Matthew McConaughey that said it. He said, your character's first line should be their, I don't remember the exact verbiage he used, but I think he said your, like, takeoff line or your landing, something, I think it was something, like, some sort of metaphor for a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, their first line should, like, give you a lot about their character. Like, mm-hmm. a good section of, like, oh, they're this type of person, they're this type of person. Not exactly narrow it down, everything about their character.
Like a first impression.
Yeah. It's like, this is your first impression. It shouldn't just be like a, oh, hey. Like, mm-hmm. This is their first thing. And when V talks and he does that monologue, you, like, instantly learn everything about this guy. In mm-hmm. that one instance, you tell that he's had a troubled past. You can tell of his experience with like fighting and his like desire to help people. It also kind of reminded me of the Batman
mm-hmm.
When he's like at the train yard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just instantly just right into it. I was like, okay.
Well, yeah.
And then, I mean, that opening scene with like the guy being hung,
mm-hmm.
I thought the movie was going to be like in that era. I was like, yeah. Oh, this is like a period piece. And then it goes into that and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Or the girl at the beginning that's like, remember, the 5th of November.
Yeah. And Hugo Weaving as V, like, he wears a mask the whole time. So everything he does relies solely on
his physicality. Voice
and, like, his body language and what he does physically. So, which is great. I think he did a great job because, I mean, it's sometimes it's hard for people to create so much of emotion just by looking at a character and seeing what they do and what they say.
Because that was like their biggest problem with the 2002 Sam Raimi Spider-Man is because mm-hmm. he has to have so much physicality because his eyes don't move. And that's why they are so animated now with like Tom Holland Spider-Man, as his eyes are all mm-hmm. like they squint because they tell everything in the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the what is it? The eyes are the window to the soul.
Yeah.
So with this, it's just a blank face. And you can maybe a few times like see his eyes for a second, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And then like he mixes menace, charm, idealism all into one, and like very reminiscent of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
With the like his dialogue. Even the way he looks.
Like Shakespearean.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the way he delivers lines is just so good. Yeah. So good. And I wonder how Hugo Weaving prepared for the dialogue.
Yeah, I was thinking the whole time.
It's a lot, because like, when he talks, it's a lot. And it's, like I said, it's a lot of big words. Easily trip over them. But I want to know how many takes it took to get him through these monologues. Mm-hmm. Or how much he practiced his lines to get them done. Especially when he did the ones where almost every word he said began with a V.
Mm-hmm. So. That is just so cool. But I do think maybe one thing that helped him so much, or like enhanced his performance so much, was Natalie Portman's performance and like her character.
Mm-hmm.
Their characters almost like boosted each other and almost just made them better on screen together.
Yeah.
And they had like a really good like chemistry. Like, I really like her like monologue at the end when the inspector is like, when right after they're like leaving the train. Like,
who was he?
And she's like, he was my mother. He was my father. He was my friend.
Mm-hmm. He was you. He was me. He was everyone. Yeah.
I was like that. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it was good. And like, I think she had the people. Best character development, because she begins kind of naive and
scared, like, traumatic.
Yeah. And then she grows into, I mean, she had a lot of baggage with like everything that happened to her in the past.
And she didn't want to like hold on to it anymore.
Yeah.
She wanted a way to get rid of it.
Yeah. And the way that V kind of turned her into this like courageous, morally aware figure was, I always, in the past watching it, I never really understood why V did that to her until like this last watch. I'm like, okay, everything kind of clicked for me then. But like, he just made her to where she's this strong person and can, you know, I think V maybe wanted her to carry out what he was doing after he was gone, or maybe just be a sidekick or something like that. But definitely kind of helped her open her eyes to everything that's going on and things like that. So I think she had the best character development out of, you know, the few cast members.
I think it was supposed to be kind of like the, did they even have a name? The V's? Like all the
at the people? End?
Yeah.
No, they're just the people of the UK.
So when, because I feel like, to me, I thought of it as like a religious thing. Like, him doing that is kind of like he's giving her the opportunity to be fearless and to be fully aware and stuff. And so I saw it as like, it's way messed up, like what happened. But like, it was like him giving her the opportunity for it. And then that scene when she's like walking out into the rain.
Oh, yeah.
And then
you felt like,
and then you see the flashbacks of him in the fire and then her in the rain.
Yeah, it felt
that just shows the contrast with him.
Liberating, and you could tell like she felt liberated
and accomplished.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did think it was kind of weird that she kind of forgave him very quickly.
Yeah. It was a big moment of triumph.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it was a little weird. She was like, "What the heck?" And he was like, "I don't want to do it. But you said you wanted to be fearless." And then she's like, "Oh."
Yeah, I think that was like the charmingness of him that kind of helped kind of move her past that.
Yeah. My weird thing with his character is that he is like, his character is kind of contradicting. He's stoic, but at the same time, not bumbly, but he's almost like stumbly-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not perfectly just like upright and just big and brolic. He's slim. And he's just to himself, and he just is what he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes him so, well, like, stoic, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Then we have Inspector Finch.
Mm-hmm.
At first, you kind of don't know where he stands.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like at the end, before everything happens, that you see, okay.
He was just he's one of the good guys. He was doing what he was told.
Mm-hmm.
And like you kind of see like he didn't want to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like...
He was like a prisoner in his own aspect, like the other people.
He
like
had
the people.
He had a point where he was just... He was doing what he was told. He was doing his job. But as he was doing his job and uncovering this thing, he was uncovering a lot of covered up secrets that kind of made him realize, okay, what I'm working for is not something that I want to be working for. And I'm okay with it kind of getting blown up, mm-hmm. literally. So, yeah, I liked his character a lot because he also had some pretty good character development. I think V kind of had the least amount of character development.
He did in like the last little bit.
Mm.
But like he's just got so many good lines. Like at the beginning when she's like, "Are you crazy?" And he's like, "At the end, they will probably think I was."
Yeah.
And then when he's like, "The only thing, the only similarity between you and me is that we're both going to die tonight."
Mm-hmm.
That's just so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the Chancellor, Sutler.
Yeah.
He
did really good.
Yeah, he did really good. And it kind of...
Really made you not like the guy.
Yeah, and it was very reminiscent of...
Hitler.
And kind of like the First Order as well.
Yeah.
From Star Wars. But, yeah, he did good. And I'm glad that they kind of kept him kind of behind the scenes for everything up until the end. Where he's just on the screen or...
You see his hand
or something. Yeah, you see just his hand break the glass. But you don't really see him anywhere else. I think that was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want him too much into it. Because then he would have felt too much involved. Where I'm glad they kind of kept everything where he was kind of the puppet master behind it. Like all the secrets and lies and the way things are now. And just, yeah, it was... Really good.
I think the reason why they did that is always showing him on the screen. It almost conveyed like you can never like see this guy. You only get a certain window of opportunity to see him. So it kind of gave the illusion of this like of his power,
mm-hmm.
and then just kind of made him felt like an unreachable, untouchable figure.
Yeah, yeah. Like when
and separated him from your average Joe.
Yeah, like when they did that. When Gordon did that episode and brought out the Chancellor, you see everybody watching, they're all just so surprised that, mm-hmm. like, Gordon got him on the show. It was a little confusing.
Yeah, there's
like,
two of
was
them.
It really, was he really invited to do it, or was somebody just, you know, wearing a mask? I mean, obviously it seemed like it was the actual actor doing it, but,
mm.
Yeah, they made him not humanized, so that everybody was just so surprised to see him on that show, which was, I liked it.
It almost gave like a untangibility,
mm-hmm.
to where it was like, you as like an audience member, like, oh, you want to get this guy, but you can't because he's always just behind a screen. So
yeah, I also kind of like big, like just the idea Big Brother, of Big Brother, where you don't see Big Brother, but you know he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I really like the line from The Dark Knight that the Joker says, where he's like, in their last moments, you really see who they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to know which of them are cowards? In this moment, he's like screaming and crying. And then when he shoots him in the head, he's like, are you going to cry like him too?
Yeah.
But like, I do like it when films do that with like, when it really get to like see this window of the real person within, mm-hmm. this like shell that, mm-hmm. they've made of the character.
Yeah.
Just good acting, good writing, just good filmmaking, mm-hmm. and just good storytelling.
Yeah. And there was a lot of impactful moments, like the mantra itself. Remember, remember the 5th of November.
Mm-hmm. That is so iconic.
Yeah. It.
Not gonna lie, I didn't know what that was from until I watched this movie.
Really?
Mm-mm.
It's
always something I've heard, but I was like never like.
It always pops in my head around November. It's something that just sticks with you,
mm-hmm.
and like I always thought it was just Remember the 5th of November, and then some other stuff. Like, that part you don't really
remember.
But you definitely remember this little mantra.
The 5th of November.
Yes.
Or the 5th of December.
Yeah, the December, yeah. So, yeah. Also, we talked about EB's imprisonment and rebirth, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And the fake imprisonment.
It felt like I was watching Shutter Island again.
Yeah, it was.
I was like, what? When she just like walks out into his living room, and I was like, was that like a really cool transition that they were doing? Like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind type of transition?
Mm-hmm.
And then
he's just
there. And then he's like, it was me. Yeah. I did do it. But I had to.
Yeah, it definitely kind of kept you surprised when she actually walked out into his area, because as you're watching, you kind of see that the government, it makes it seem like they do something, they have done something like that, and they will do it, they're currently doing it, but also she's getting, during like the montage of her being imprisoned, you thought it was real, but I think part for me what made it seem more real
was the shower thing.
Not the shower thing, but the fact that the different people coming to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different voice. It wasn't V, like his voice.
Mm-hmm.
It was something completely different. So that's what made it seem.
It reminded me of like Sin City. Like the lighting for mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah. But I mean, after she kind of comes out and you're like, oh, that was fake. Then you kind of start thinking about, okay, well, everything, all the people that she talked to, or the two people, I guess she talked to, was in a shadow. So you couldn't see their face. So that makes sense. And then also one thing that I still don't really understand was the whole letter that she got. I don't know what that was meant to do, or what the story behind it, if it was a real person. Obviously, at the end, you do see that person there, but like the letter or the autobiography, as she called it, like what that was supposed to mean.
You ready?
Okay.
Ow. That one hurt. So, I think, so the reason, so V was in prison with that woman, and then I'm assuming there's probably some sort of like how that rat was getting through the thing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I feel like it's kind of like this part of it is kind of like your own headcanon. To me, it's probably something like she like slipped it through someone's cell, just hoping that someone would see it, or maybe she did leave it in the toilet and V found it when he was in prison. But I feel like it was probably some sort of like he actually knew this person,
because
otherwise, how did he know what she looked like?
Yeah.
So she might have been like his only friend or something there, or the only person that like looked out for him.
Okay.
That's why he did the tradition of every time he like killed someone, put a rose on them, and then when he died, he was surrounded by the roses. I feel like she was like someone very important in his life, and I think that was just supposed to. That mostly, I think it was exposition, kind of telling you what it was like for a lot of these people and what these prisons are like. And then at the same time, almost humanizing and bringing what is happening to life and make it a little more relatable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was the main purpose of that.
Okay. That makes sense. Okay.
It's just kind of giving someone, like kind of telling someone's life and kind of, it almost kind of brings you out of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And like shows you a perspective of something else, because it's almost like, oh, this happens to other people, not just these people I'm seeing on screen, like someone that like I'm hearing about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost just kind of, it just brings it to life.
Yeah.
To real life a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think mostly it's exposition.
Okay.
But it's also just good storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Actually, going back to cinematography, I do want to talk about the dominoes.
Okay, yeah.
I think, so the dominoes took, it was three camera shots,
uh-huh.
but it wasn't enough.
Okay.
They had to do it several times. Like, over the span of, like, I think it was, like, an excessive amount. I'm going to fact check it real quick, but I think it was way more than, like, a couple days. Like, I think it was...
Because, oh, wow. I mean, that was a lot of dominoes.
Yeah, I think it was, like, 22,000 dominoes. It was 600 hours, 25 days.
Just to film that?
Just to film that part. Wow. 25 days for that. But I did like how it all ends, and then there's one domino
left. Yeah, one left standing.
And V is the last piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, because I think all those dominoes are supposed to be people.
Okay.
Supposed to represent the people that he was in prison with.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is the last one, and he's the last domino to fall. And then once he falls, then, like, everything is open and free to the people.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like foreshadowing.
Yeah, and he dies with it, too.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, he was dead, but mm-hmm. the domino goes out with his body.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, okay. Interesting. Sound design and music.
The music, to me, wasn't really, like, a standpoint. Like, I feel like there just wasn't
just
really
the
anything.
The 1812 Overture.
Yeah.
That final poetic, cathartic, you know... The irony of it. I mean, that was really the only thing that stood out to me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, sound design, V's voice.
Yeah, V's voice and, like, his weapons, his knives.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded great. My favorite sound, though, is when he carves the V
mm-hmm.
into the propaganda thing.
Yeah.
And they, like, spark, and it's like...
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I think the story itself is interesting because there's like a two parallel stories. It's mm-hmm. his personal vendetta,
yeah.
and then him liberating the people of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it, like they all kind of connect at some point. So, which is really nice storytelling because you don't get overwhelmed with anything, and everything, you can see it as it's happening.
Like, you as an audience member, like, you kind of feel, like, the dominoes, like, falling. Because it's almost like, it, like you said, like, it's, like, several different, like, storylines. You have what's happening with Natalie Portman's character.
Mm-hmm.
You have V, then you have Chancellor. You have, like, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, it all just comes together and ends.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to talk about that ending scene when he's stabbing everyone.
Mm-hmm.
How they did that was really interesting. They filmed at 60 frames per second, which is like 2.5 times faster, like the shutter speed, because film movies are done at 24.
Mm-hmm.
So they did it at 60. And then they had all the actors going in slow motion, kind of. And then they had V going at normal speed. And it just kind of created this illusion of him being faster than them,
mm-hmm.
and then they did slow it down a little bit, like, in post, just so it looked a little better, and then, like, with the whole, like, shadow, like, wisp, I don't even know what you call that, the drag, I guess, mm-hmm. of, like, the blade, where you see, like, the trail.
Yeah, the trail, yeah.
The trail, it, it just kind of, it's just a big illusion
mm-hmm.
that makes you think he's moving so much faster than he actually was.
Yeah, that and
it's just old. Fight scene was it's really just, good. I mean, that's just old filmmaking techniques.
Yeah,
brought into a modernized version, which good filmmaking.
Yeah, I really liked how.
I like how he didn't fight a lot.
No,
just
no.
like twice.
What my probably one of my favorite scenes is when he's talking about how everybody, he's gonna kill Creedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, how are you going to do that? And he's like, with my hands around your throat. And then...
I think he doesn't wait to do it. He mm-hmm. just holds him up there and then snaps his neck.
Yeah. And then he talks about how he's going to kill everybody in there. And he's like, well, how are you going to do that? With you have knives and we have guns. He's like, well, I know that all of your guns will soon be empty. Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. And you will all be dead before you have the chance to reload. And then they all just start open fire. And the when they're done and it kind of does that close up shot of his face and that raspy breathing, and then he just slowly gets up.
He just rises
so
up.
So good.
It was like, also reminded me of the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like how the only sound design thing I didn't like is the one guy that manages to get his magazine out,
mm-hmm.
hits the floor, and it's like a really loud, like steel hitting steel
okay,
sound.
Yeah.
And I was like, it would not make that noise.
No.
It wouldn't sound like steel on steel.
No.
Mainly because it's not that heavy.
Yeah.
And it's
okay.
on stone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, for what they were doing, it makes sense. But I just think the Foley artist could have probably done something a little more better. Something better.
Okay. I have some more behind the scenes stories. So the original comic book creator, Alan Moore, he disowned the film due to creative and ideological differences. And I'll talk about what was changed between the comic and the movie, because there's some pretty big changes in this. And then he emphasized anarchy while the film leaned toward a libertarian liberalism. And then they're filming real protest style scenes. The explosion of Parliament used thousands of extras and practical effects. London's tube closure was negotiated for the final scene. Rare access for film production, which is pretty cool. And I think that's very, I think without it, it could still be the same. Mm-hmm. But to actually get access like that, where not a lot of film productions could.
Especially for a first-time
yeah.
director.
Yeah. Glad they did that, because it was good. So, yeah. Some fun facts. The word V appears over 50 times in the film, and dialogue is packed with alliteration, his introduction monologue. Real explosions were used for the Old Bailey and Parliament scenes, so that's cool.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. The Guy Fawkes Max design for the movie became global protest symbol. So
I do
like
how like heavy the mask is. The mask just looks so heavy.
So it seems, because there's a shot where he gets punched, and
the guy like
yeah,
it seems like it's made
it's
of
like,
metal.
Yeah,
like
steel.
It's
a metal. Whereas now when you
it's plastic,
it's just a thin plastic that
yeah.
you can get. So
or when he takes it off and he smashes it into the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's like. It had a weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it did look, like, actually heavy
mm-hmm.
compared to, like,
well,
Now You See
now.
Me 3 that
mm-hmm.
came out, or is coming out. There's a shot in the trailer where the woman is holding up the diamond and then explodes, and then Jesse Eisenberg is holding it up. And you can clearly see that it, like, literally weighs nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has no tangible weight to it.
Yep. Yeah. So the Occupy Wall Street, the anonymous guy, uses it, and it's become such a global protest symbol now, which fits for what the movie was.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that a lot. I mean, I'm not that I'm with what other people do. Like, I think this kind of stuff should stay in movies, unless it's important, I guess. I don't know. But the symbol, the fact that this movie
was that influential.
Influential, yeah. It's pretty powerful. I'd say.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Speaking of powerful movies, this is really, really off topic. But I saw a video the other day, Josh Brolin was in the Criterion Closet, and they have a No Country Criterion, so he's talking about No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that, because there's a lot of stories with him especially, probably the most, talking about on set, they all were just kind of like, oh, this is a fun movie to make. Hopefully a few people will watch it. They really didn't think it was going to be anything special. They were
mm-hmm.
like, oh, this is a really fun movie to do. And then he said that when the movie came out, him and his son watched it in theaters and didn't talk for 20 minutes after.
Oh.
And then he was like, that's never happened before. It probably hasn't happened again.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't happen again. He's like, that just shows, like, great filmmaking.
Yeah.
And this one, it ended, and I was like, wow. I need to hurry up and leave to get here. But I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, that movie is so good.
Ow.
So good. I like watching it every now and then. So you've mentioned the Batman a couple times,
mm-hmm.
and this movie does have some influence on the Batman, like the echoes of mass justice, urban unrest, and the V-like messaging. Other movies, The Hunger Games, themes of rebellion, propaganda, media manipulation, Snowpiercer as well.
Ooh, yeah.
Revolution in dystopia, class, conflict, and symbolic storytelling. So,
Blade Runner? See a Blade Runner?
Possibly. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All right. Now, what the differences between the comic and the movie are.
I'm excited to hear this one.
All right. So, what stayed the same? What setting? Dystopia, fascist Britain. Core characters, V, E.B. Finch, the Norse Fire Party, the Guy Fawkes masks, Roses, Underground Lair, Parliament, Explosion, things like that. Themes, government control, revolution, fear, and the power of ideas. The changes. All right. So the tone. So in the comic book, it was a raw anarchist message. The movie, more liberal, democratic message. Evie, in the comic book, she was a teenage prostitute. And in the movie, there is a part where she's playing that character. But I think it's just a nod to the comic book. But in the movie, she's older, works at a TV station. V's identity. In the comic book, it's left unknown. It's more abstract, kind of like the Joker,
mm-hmm.
kind of how we don't really know his backstory. It changes a lot.
He is kind of like the Joker and Batman are combined.
Yeah.
And it is a DC project. Mm-hmm.
But in the movie, it's hinted at as a Lark Hill test subject. So we see the backstory on that. I think that works for this movie. Kind of,
yeah.
It helps it a little bit. So
I think they showed enough of
that. Yes.
Yeah. And I like how the woman says when she's talking about when she sees him,
mm-hmm.
like rise out of the like the fire, is it was a faceless figure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that was, yeah.
Yeah. The ending in the comic book, Evie assumes V's role, so she takes over for him. But in the movie, mm-hmm. she honors V, but does not continue his persona.
From what it sounds like, I'd need to read the comic to like really have an opinion. But from what it sounds like, I preferred the movie's adaptation from Evie's character being older.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also think about like Percy Jackson to me. It doesn't make sense that he's 14.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like it makes sense if he's older.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better for her character that she honors him rather than becomes an ex-temp. Because I think that was like his whole shtick. And like this story makes sense that he doesn't want anyone to be the next him. That's why he is fighting so hard for this, is so no one has to be the next him.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it doesn't make sense if someone does become
him. At that point, it makes everything that he did kind of
pointless.
Yeah, and he died for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think I, based off of this, not reading the comic, I will eventually read it because now I'm glad I know it's a comic book. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
and I'm like glad his backstory stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they chose to, for the movie adaptation, that she just doesn't continue, but she finishes his final wish. Because, I mean, Hollywood loves to make sequels, and I think this is just the one good standalone movie that could be ruined with sequels.
I'm really happy that, because if she did pick up the mantle, mm-hmm. then they definitely would have.
Yeah,
could you imagine? There would have been sequels, there would have been shows, there would have been remakes, prequels, reboots.
Yeah, could you imagine, like, Natalie Portman as V
today.
Yeah,
she would probably be like Elizabeth Olsen
mm-hmm.
playing Wanda right now. She's like, I'm just done.
Yeah, yeah. Also, the villain in the comic book leader is Adam Susan, calm and God obsessed. But in the movie, it's renamed Sutler, and he's a loud fascist dictator.
I think that's one thing that just translates better.
Yeah.
In live action.
Yeah, it does. Violence, more in the comic book, more personal, ideological in the movie, more cinematic and explosive. So it fits. Mm-hmm. I think the changes that they made were for the better. And fortunately, Alan Moore, like, he didn't like it. That's fine.
Well, Stanley Kubrick and Stephen King had big differences on The Shining. Like, in the book, the entire hotel blows up. The entire third act is different in the movie. So Stephen King disowned the movie.
Yeah,
but, I mean, it's also... You can't tell Stanley Kubrick to not do something, because then he's going to do it.
Yeah, and you can't always pull everything out of a book or literature and translate it to a movie, because it's not going to do the same thing.
In Captain America, I love how he has the first suit that he puts on is the best comic book to screen suit. Like, literally taking it from the comic, putting it on the screen. And it just shows, you can't do that. Yeah. It looks stupid. It looks bad.
Yeah.
And the militaristic style from a lot of the suits kind of doesn't... I mean, it makes sense, but, like, some of it's a little too much. But, like, a lot of stuff you have to change for live action. Like, one movie that is a bit of an exception is Sin City. Like... one of the characters is completely illuminated with band-aids. Like, that's basically it. How do you do that live action? And so what they did was is they used black lights, and then they had, like, lights, like, the band-aids were reflective off of it, and he, like, wore a shirt that was just, like, a white shirt that was reflective off of it, so that they can easily make a mask of it. So, like, that movie, I feel like, is an exception of comic to screen. Because the whole thing is just that stylized.
Yeah.
But a lot of it yet that alter.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot where your movies take everything that's in a book, comic book, whatever, and puts it onto a screen.
Because it wouldn't make sense to see a calm, quietish character be the hero, and then the villain also be that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it makes sense with how they were... why he was depicted like that.
Yeah. All right. We got some questions for you.
All right. I've got maybe some answers.
Do you consider V a terrorist, a freedom fighter, or both?
To both. Because technically, to them, in a textbook definition, he is a terrorist to them. And, like, definition. But... his definition, he is a freedom fighter. So I feel like he's both.
Yeah, like it's like he started a rebellion, like we've seen so many times. Star Wars, I mean, the biggest example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say he's both as well. Does the movie dilute or evolve the original comic's message based off of just what I told you they changed?
The comic's message, I think... dilutes it, because the original comic is just total anarchy, right?
Yep, a raw anarchist message.
And then this one is
more liberal, democratic message, liberation, things like that.
Yeah, I feel like it
kind of tamed it a little bit, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Could this film be made today without controversy?
Without controversy? No, I feel like it's still going to, no matter what, it would, like, probably spike something. If it was, like, released today, I think it probably would, at least somewhere. Maybe, like, the depiction of what he does to Natalie Portman's character, or...
Yeah, that would have to probably be a little bit different, maybe. Or I feel like if they did that... they would probably have her, like, do a training montage.
Yeah.
Where she's okay with everything, and she's like, I want to do this. I want to do this. And he's just like, okay, and I don't agree with this, but let's do it. And then kind of does it that way.
I think I just figured it out. I think V's character mostly reminds me of, like, Daredevil.
Really?
Yeah. Man Without Fear. He's, like, very troubled past, and then, like, trying to change it for the future.
Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was just off topic, but, yeah, I think they would definitely probably change so much more to like modernize it as mm-hmm. well. Like, I'm sure technology now would have been a role in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think they should remake it.
No. I don't think so either. No.
I feel like leaving it how it is now makes it timeless. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you modernize it, then obviously it won't translate.
Yeah. Think. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to discuss?
I do want to say, for a directorial debut, wow, that's crazy that is a debut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't, yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah, they did such a good job with this movie. I've always really liked it, and it is one of those timeless pieces, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what, because whether it be fake or real, like, it's still going to translate to, I mean, even it could translate a little bit to real life. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I like this movie a lot.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable, and this will probably definitely be an annual watch. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like this movie, even, like, talking about it more now.
Kind of like I watch
really,
it?
Yeah, I will probably watch it on the 5th.
Okay.
Even though that's, like, basically next week.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. The sequence editing, pretty textbook. It was good. Enjoyable. I do want to know what it was like behind the scenes when they filmed that, because I saw something the other day about Tarantino talking about how he did the Kill Bill scene against Beatrice Kiddo, the wife, the whatever you want to call her. Her versus the Crazy 88.
Mm-hmm.
He filmed it the Hong Kong way, the Hong Kong style of, like, fighting in movies. It's because the American way is you get half the room, you get half the room, and then you shoot this half, you shoot this half. But then that's just so all over the place, especially for how long that scene is. That scene is like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hong Kong way is you shoot in order, so your continuity is there and your ideas are flowing in one direction. You can easily change something, because, like, if you do the American way and you're do this, but this is like the eighth action, and this room there's like the fourth action, if you want to change something about the fourth, then it's like kind of derivative from here. It's bouncing all over the place. But I want to know if that they filmed that final sequence in chronological order, or if they just kind of filmed it all over the place.
Okay, that'd be good to know.
But yeah, that's all I got.
All right. You said you gave it a 4. I also gave it a 4.
I think I'm gonna leave it at a 4.
Okay.
I don't think I could bump it up to a 4.5 though.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. No. Super enjoyable though.
Yeah, really enjoyable. Enjoyment wise, definitely 4.5.
Yeah.
But enjoyment and critical wise, that's a 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you haven't watched this movie, go watch this movie.
Yeah. You can see all of our other listening platforms and stuff, or watching platforms or social medias at the top of the description. Whenever this comes out, there will be a movie news on that Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And you got anything else?
Nope.
Beneath the mask, there is more than flesh. Beneath this mask, there is an idea. And ideas are bulletproof.